From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. Today, I'm bringing you the last of the interviews that I recorded while I was in Seoul last year. I'm excited to say that while I was in Korea, I was able to sit down with Sina Paulson, who is the head of the new UN Human Rights Office in Seoul. The office opened in 2015 with the goal of monitoring and documenting the human rights situation in North Korea, working with other organizations and governments, and keeping the public informed about human rights in the DPRK. We discuss a lot of important things that the office has been working on since they opened just a few years ago, and about the human rights situation in general. So without further ado, please enjoy the discussion. Sina, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today about the UN office and about the human rights situation in North Korea.
Oh, thank you very much.
So the UN Human Rights Office in Seoul is pretty new, opening only in 2015. Can you give us a little bit of an introduction to you and to the office? How did it come to exist and how did you get involved?
So the UN Human Rights Office in Seoul opened following a commission of inquiry on the human rights situation in the DPRK. Basically, for a long time, the United Nations Human Rights Office, OHCHR, had been getting reports about a very grave and serious human rights situation in the DPRK. And so in 2013, the office decided to hold a commission of inquiry. And basically what that is a one-year investigation of the human rights situation, where three experts were appointed to look into all kinds of different information about the human rights situation in the DPRK. That commission of inquiry published their report in 2014. And what they concluded was reasonable grounds to believe that crimes against humanity had been and were being committed in the DPRK, and that these were committed at the highest level of the state. So based on this, the Human Rights Council then requested the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to establish an office, which became our office, the Office of the High Commissioner in Seoul.
And how about you? How did you end up here in Seoul, heading up this new office?
Right, so I'd been a human rights officer with the High Commissioner for Human Rights in various capacities, mainly in Asia, but also elsewhere, for about 10 years or so. But adding to that, and in that capacity, I had the opportunity to do monitoring and capacity building and all kinds of other tasks and gain some skills. But in addition to that, I also had a very great liking for this part of the world that is Northeast Asia, partly as a result spent here both as a child and also later at the university, not in Korea, but in other parts of Northeast Asia. So in a way, it was a sort of fortunate coming together of a personal interest in this region and also with the organization that I worked for and had developed some kind of expertise with. And that's how I became involved.
So on your website, I read that the office has basically three different but connected missions. The first is to strengthen monitoring and documentation of human rights in the DPRK. The second is enhance engagement with governments and civil society. And the third is to maintain visibility of the issue in the public eye. So could you go through and give us a little bit of an idea of how you've been pursuing each of these different missions?
Yeah, so it's true that we have a threefold mandate that was given to us by the Human Rights Council. In terms of monitoring and documentation, we talk to as many people as we can who have expertise in and knowledge of the situation in the DPRK, including those with very more recent knowledge, of course, of the situation. That includes people who've come from the DPRK, experts, civil society, government actors, and others. And we try to compare that information to come out with a reasonable assessment of what the situation is, but also how things are changing. In terms of visibility, we contribute then this analysis of the situation to various reports at the international level, in the General Assembly and in the Human Rights Council, but also talk to media and other sources to get this information out. And in terms of engagement with governments and civil society, there are a number of things we do. Some of it includes, you know, talking with civil society actors, but also distributing information about how to engage effectively with United Nations mechanisms. So we know, for example, that there are many organizations in the ROK, but also elsewhere in the world, who have for a long time collected information about the human rights situation in the DPRK. And in fact, you know, far more than our organization has gathered over 1 year of our existence now. And so to engage with those organizations and show them how they can get that information effectively to be considered in a UN forum is a very important part of our mandate. Of course, engaging would also potentially include talking to authorities in the DPRK and talking to them about how they might improve the human rights situation in their country. So that is something we would very much hope to be able to do in the future.
North Korea is perhaps unique in the world in terms of how difficult it is to secure and also to verify information. So how does your office deal with the difficulties that you may encounter as you work to document human rights abuses that are going on in the DPRK?
Yeah, I will say that every country has its own challenges when it comes to documenting human rights information. And when you're trying to do such investigations and documentation, you are usually trying to find information that someone doesn't want you to have. So in that sense, North Korea is not necessarily unique. What is unique is the persistence and the level of restrictions on information coming in and out of the country. So the lack of access, for example, to monitors, and the lack of a civil society movement inside the DPRK, a human rights defenders movement that could provide information and understanding of what is going on in the DPRK. And that makes the DPRK a particular and perhaps unique challenge when it comes to documenting human rights situations. But because we in OHCHR have this experience of working in very difficult and challenging situations, our methodology generally, I think, can very well be adapted to such kinds of monitoring and investigation. So some of the things we try to do is gather as much information as possible, looking at whether it's reasonable and looking at how different types of information may come together to create a fuller picture. And having said that, also with a bit of humility about the fact that we don't have comprehensive information. And it's true, we don't, because we cannot. And often our information is not most recent or most up-to-date. So I think, you know, saying that we can get a lot of information is also saying, but we cannot get all the information that we would like to get. And in some ways, I feel that what it also means is it becomes very difficult to monitor areas where potentially the DPRK might be making efforts to improve the situation, like for perhaps areas like the rights of persons with disabilities, where they recently signed a treaty, or rights of women or rights of children, where they have submitted treaty reports. So this lack of access and lack of information in some ways is a two-edged sword.
Right. I think it's really interesting that the goal here is not just to collect a lot of information about the horrible violations of human rights in North Korea that are going on, but to use that information to possibly hold the regime accountable for those violations in the future. So what would that accountability look like in an ideal world, knowing, of course, that the real world isn't always ideal? But what would you hope to use the information for, and how is that information collection different when you have accountability in mind?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, all our work is aimed at improving the basic human rights of every individual living in the DPRK. And in that way, working on accountability issues is not so different than other kinds of monitoring. But why do we talk about accountability? We talk about accountability because the scale of violations in the DPRK have been, according to information we have, so grave that they need addressing for this improved rights and dignity of individuals to happen. So the ideal picture of accountability involves things like restoring and improving the dignity of victims, ensuring non-repetition, so sending out a clear signal that these practices are not acceptable, and also to rebuild ultimately a kind of trust in state institutions so that people know that their government is there to protect them and to help them fulfill their lives, really. And that includes things like right to education, equal right to education, to food and to health, not dependent on, you know, what your family background is, but because of your dignity as an individual person, whoever you are. But also things like being guaranteed that you'll not be randomly subjected to torture, that you'll not be in any way subjected to torture, of course, more accurately, or imprisoned without a fair trial. So all of those things are ultimately what we aim for when we talk about accountability.
So I was really lucky enough to interview Justice Michael Kirby last year, who headed up the Commission of Inquiry that you mentioned earlier. And I asked him whether he thought that the public interest in the human rights situation in North Korea has been sustained in the 2 years since the Commission of Inquiry's report. And his answer was really interesting. He basically said that people are still interested in North Korea, but only because of the nuclear and missile program and not really because of the human rights concerns. So I'm curious, first of all, if you agree with that assessment, and if so, what can groups like your office and others do to keep attention on this important issue?
The COI report was incredibly important because it really established sort of the bottom line one time and for all. It established that there are huge human rights issues in the DPRK. It held public hearings, it held private hearings with victims, and it really set the bottom line for what is happening. And having said that, of course, it's not that that information wasn't available. It was, because, again, I want to pay tribute to the many civil society organizations and individual victims who have spoken out in the past. Now the challenge is, how do we best address those violations? And that is something that's probably a much more long-term and in some ways a very difficult question to answer, and perhaps not one that is easy to gain so much one-off publicity for. So what we're trying to do is essentially to get an accurate and a more comprehensive view on how best to address these serious human rights violations in the DPRK. It is true that this answer to this question cannot, in political terms, purely be separated from all the other questions and all the other concerns we have in relation to the DPRK. So people may be interested in the DPRK for very different reasons, but regardless of what the other reasons are, human rights must remain at the center of that, because human rights actually holds, I think, a lot of the potential to change, you know, whatever aspect it is that you're interested in when it comes to the DPRK. With basic civil and political rights such as freedom of information and right to expression, for example, we would have a much better understanding of many of those other concerns that are going on. And people inside the DPRK would also be able to voice opinions about those more freely. So that's how I think we try to maintain the momentum on human rights. But I also want to point out that I see this very much as a long-term issue. Whatever happens in the future, and we cannot predict the future, nor do we want to in particular, but one thing we can predict is that human rights do not change radically overnight. Whatever happens, and North Korea is not a static society at all, whatever happens, we will have to be working on human rights in the long term, again, as exactly to build those institutions, to rebuild rule of law, for example, in line with international standards, to ensure that the right to food and the right to education and a quality education built on human rights values, for example, is restored, and that can take, you know, many years. So we are not viewing this as a short-term exposure, but rather as a long-term and consistent approach.
I completely agree, and it's heartening in a lot of ways to know that you guys are in it for the long haul here in Seoul. Before we go, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about the office, about the work you're doing here?
So one thing I think that's important to emphasize is the very good and important work that is being done by human rights organizations internationally, and in particular also by a number of persons from the DPRK who've been involved in those movements. The role of civil society in any kind of human rights defense or human rights promotion is incredibly important, and this is also why we are particularly concerned about the lack of a civil society movement inside the DPRK, because ultimately human rights improvement must be based on choices that people inside a country has. It's very difficult to impose it from the outside, although we can draw on experiences. So in that sense, a more comprehensive approach would very much seek to also work with the groups that are working in the DPRK to improve the human rights situation there.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much again for setting aside some time to talk to me. This is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, so I'm always happy to talk about these things and learn more about what different groups are doing to try to improve the human rights situation in North Korea. So thank you again for speaking with me.
Thank you very much, Jenna.
Let me just say thank you once again for joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we'll see you here again next week.